The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Thursday morning to you. It is a numbers game at Visa, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. Live from Circa. It's a numbers game where sports betting lives. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, what's happening?
Not much, buddy. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. You know,
rocking out some Billie Eilish.
No, it was 24 hours of listening to Maze featuring Frankie Beverly as a tribute.
Okay.
Matt Brown and I went to the ATP Challenger Tour here in Vegas.
Oh, you guys did. I didn't even think to follow up with either one of you about it because as soon as we left here yesterday.
Yeah.
In fact, I was embarrassed when we were on air not knowing about the fires. Oh my gosh, that was as bad an air quality in Las Vegas as I've ever seen.
By afternoon, it had kind of cleared up.
Yeah, later in the afternoon.
Yeah, it was, the players qualifying for the main tour, and there was a little live betting clinic happening up in the stands.
Nice.
Fantastic. On the show today, Zach Cohen joins us. It's Zach and Crack Thursday. Zach Cohen joins us to talk National Football League and college football. He's got some plays. And then the crack part of it is Bill Krakenberger. Bill's a little under the weather today. So he was like, hey, do you mind if I do it from home? And I was like, well, Bill, you know, if you're under the weather, you don't have to come at all.
You're allowed to take a week off.
You're allowed to take a week off because they're paying
despite
you.
Despite how much we pay you.
Despite how much we're paying you. You're allowed to take a week off. And he was like, no. I just want to do a couple of segments. So we're like, okay, you can go on. And then UFC 306 with Jordan Sherwood. Nice card.
Yeah, at the Sphere.
At the Sphere, that's right. Featuring Sean Sugar O'Malley, or Sugar Sean O'Malley, I should say, who's a slight favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Slight favorite in his bantamweight main event match against Merab Dvalishvili. So we'll get into that, plus other bouts as well there. World Series exactas, you know, a little less crack, a little more of you and me. So we'll do some World Series exactas a little later on. I want to start, of course, with Thursday Night Football, the Dolphins and the Bills. When we did this on Monday, I guessed, you know, guesses go. I guessed that the Dolphins would be 4-point favorites. I had them above a 3-point favorite. You told me it was a 1-point favorite.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, maybe you don't like my 4, but at least 3. Why is it less than 3? It has come my way, but not quite to the 3. Dolphins minus 2.5 in their Thursday night tilt tonight against the division rival Buffalo Bills. Both teams 1-0. Both teams 1-0 after comebacks. The Bills coming back from a 17-3 deficit against the Arizona Cardinals, and the Dolphins in a very quick span, a 14-point swing, if you will, as the Jaguars were headed into the end zone, a fumble, and then the very next play, it was Tua to Tyreek for 80. I still don't know how Tyreek got around the corner on that play. That changed that game around. Jason Sanders missed a 42-yarder way wide, and then he eventually kicked the game winner for the Dolphins as they came back to beat the Jaguars. So 2-1-0 teams in the AFC East. Obviously, the Jets are 0-1. The Patriots also 1-0 in the AFC East. So tonight, I mean, the main things I think you have to sort of keep in mind last year, by the way, if you wanted to know what happened. Bills, if you just as a reminder, Bills beat the Dolphins both times last year, 48-20, 21-14. Josh Allen, in all of his 13 career games against the Dolphins, you know what he's done in all 13 games?
Score a touchdown.
I want to shout out Sean Corner over to Action for this. 2 touchdowns in all 13, at least 2 touchdowns in all 13 of his games against the Dolphins in his career.
Yeah, if you want to get trendy, it works both ways with these quarterbacks, right? Josh Allen's had a lot of success against the Dolphins, Tua not so much against the Bills.
Tyreek, speaking of that, about Tua, Tyreek Hill, his receiving lines in his 5 games as a Dolphin against the Bills, 7-69, no touchdowns, 7-82 and 1 touchdown, 3-58, no touchdowns. He did have a 9-69 and 1 touchdown, and then 2-33 and no touchdowns. So at no point did he have more than 82 yards receiving in any of these games against the Buffalo Bills. So that's something to keep in mind if you believe in these kinds of trends. And I will say that, again, Mostert ruled out for tonight's game. Achane expected to be a game time decision. I think he's a go, but we'll see.
Yeah, game time decision. I think you're right. I think at this time yesterday, it was looking a little bit more doubtful. I think he showed a little bit more in practice yesterday than people were expecting. So yeah, those two to look out for on the Dolphins side for sure. The Bills have injuries of their own. Teron Johnson, the cornerback, one of their starting cornerbacks, will be out for the game. Dwayne Smoot, one of their pass rushers, out for the game as well. So injuries early on both sides.
We could see a little Jeff Wilson, maybe some Jalen Wright, the rook at running back for the Dolphins tonight, if, in fact, Achane is limited in any way. Mostert, again, as I said, already out. I think what all that lets me think from a Dolphins perspective is, by the way, the weather has been an issue. Folks are like, well, is it going to rain? It is a small chance. There's about a 20% chance of rain around kickoff. It's supposed to taper off. So rain shouldn't be, at least as you look at the forecast, you know how forecasts go, at least as you look at it right now, shouldn't be a huge deal. And the wind is only in single digits in terms of miles per hour. So the wind should not be an issue. So I put all of that in the wash. Pardon me.
Normal South Florida day. You're telling me it might rain late afternoon, early evening in South Florida? No way.
That's exactly right. And so I do think, you know, probably if you're leaning one way or the other on Tua props, the over sounds like it to me. Because if anything, a slick field, this is the other thing I'm hearing. Oh, it's slick field. That'll hurt the passing game of the Dolphins and help the running game or Josh Allen on his feet. I don't know, man. When it's slick on the field and you got Tyreek out there and Jalen Waddle, I don't know why. The offensive player knows where he's going. The defense doesn't.
Yeah, you get hips turning on the cornerbacks. Yeah, and they can easily be stumbling around. Think about what we saw in Brazil last week with the field conditions.
Given the running back picture, I would lean Tua over props. Anyway, I like the Dolphins here tonight. I can't put it in as a Circa Millions play because I want to wait till Saturday to do so for the most perfect information I can have for the rest of the card. But Dolphins lean for me as long as it's under three, and that's where it is right now. Dolphins minus 2.5. I want to say this. We had Cleve T.A. on yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I was already lamenting how many favorites I like this week. And this is awful in any week to only like favorites. But in week two, he didn't get a chance to say this on the show yesterday, but week two is the worst time historically to like favorites because you're basically playing into an overreaction, kind of. Yeah. At least it feels that way. Cleve wanted to mention this. Last 10 years in week two in the National Football League, favorites cover just 42.9% of the time, by far the worst of any week in the first month of the season. The other weeks, by the way, 46.5% in aggregate. So again, week two covers only, favorites only cover 42.9% of the time. That explains why the overreactions in week two are so severe. And if you want to do a little more data mining, Kelly, but if you isolate just favorites under a touchdown, like these Dolphins tonight, those favorites under a touchdown only cover 37% of the time, the lowest of any week of the season, 33% the last 5 years for what it's worth. So you can keep like sort of narrowing this down, and it gets uglier and uglier for favorites in week two.
Yeah, there's a lot of favorites that'll be on watch this week. I'm with you. I kind of lean, it feels like, towards every favorite. I do lean Buffalo in this one, I guess, tonight. I think if you are looking for a teaser partner, it's not a bad one at 2.5. Yeah. I don't think that's a bad way to approach it. I do think, I was going to ask you, with these two teams, I think there's a lot that we learned about a lot of teams in week one. Do you feel like you took anything away from either of these two teams from week one?
No, I sort of feel about them as I did before, which is I'm down on Buffalo compared to most. They had to come back from 17-3. I know people are like all focused on the comeback. You're still down 17-3 against the Cardinals. And the Cardinals had the ball on their racket. People tend to forget this little point. The Cardinals could have won that game. They had the ball on the last drive. So it wasn't like the Bills won this going away. Cardinals covered after all. And that was a weird drive. Marvin Harrison Jr. was wide open in the end zone. Kyler just didn't see him. That's the only reason the Bills perhaps come away with the win.
Should be 5-0 in millions.
And I'll just counter what I'm saying, because I said the Dolphins minus 4 when I guessed this, but I'll counter my point, which is about the Dolphins, which is I've said famously about them and the Cowboys. They're bullies, right?
Yeah.
They tend to beat up on the teams that are clearly worse than them talent-wise, but when someone their own size picks on them, not so big.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think, if anything, week one, it just kind of seemed to confirm what my thoughts were about both of these teams, like you're talking about. I think Miami, seeing them struggle with Jacksonville a little bit, not that big of a surprise based off of what we saw them do last year against bad opponents, against good opponents. I think the one big thing with Buffalo is just really seeing how that offense is planning on operating, right? They have a good offensive line. They trust that running game. I think for everybody that thinks that Buffalo is this big explosive team, that's true, and we saw that kind of in the comeback, right? But they'd love to be able to take this slow, run the ball, work the clock, keep that other offense on the other sideline. So I think that's kind of an interesting thing to monitor with Buffalo, and we all kind of suspected it heading into the season. It really did play out week one against Arizona, so I think that's going to be interesting to watch tonight. That's why you've seen this total come down, in my opinion, and get open 51.5. We're down to 48.5, a couple 48s on the board, even 48 right here at Circa. So something interesting to monitor. That's where I think Buffalo in a teaser could make sense, because that scoring is expected to be a little bit lower.
Have you become acclimated to the NFL sort of the rhythm, the meter of the schedule, where it's like, oh, it's Thursday Night Football tonight? I have not. Like, it kind of surprised me already.
I'm like, that's right,
Thursday Night Football. By the way, halftimes with Wishnev, probably not going to start tonight. He was flying back to Pittsburgh, so they will start next week. I brought, for those who are wondering about halftimes with Todd Wishnev.
What do you do? Just Monday and Thursday, not Sunday night?
Monday and Thursdays, okay. Twitter Spaces. Yeah, we're hoping to do that, but we, you know, with Todd, you never know if we can work it out.
Who's setting this up?
That would be me.
Oh man,
technological whiz.
Can we get a show just of that? can I send like Wyatt Tomchek out with a cell phone?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, after the show today, also speaking about football, if you don't get your football fix here, we are recording the week two Megapod today. Of course, Todd Wishnev, Will Hill, and myself. Todd and Will, obviously the regulars on the Megapod. That's on the Beating the Book podcast feed. Today's guest, last week was Steve Fezzik. Today, Joe Pita.
Oh, there we go.
Joe Pita, Wall Street veteran who wrote the books Trading Bases, also wrote the 2019 Masters Tour Guide, but has flirted with some good results in these contests. He's obsessed with Survivor, obsessed with Millions. So he's on the show today. Joe Pita, gonna meet Todd for the first time.
Oh my God,
so
that's always fun. I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
Doesn't always go well. You know what I mean, Jeff Schwartz? Point that out. We'll come back. Zach Cohen on the NFL and college football. That's on the other side. And boy, oh boy, we got to get some of this results in baseball. This one particular result in baseball last night. It's a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Back on a numbers game live from Circa, un partido de números. For those listening in Spanish, Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, producer number 9, so much more than a producer on the desk. Zach Cohen standing by to talk some NFL, the Bills and Dolphins tonight, of course, Thursday Night Football, and college football as well. First, I just wanted to mention baseball yesterday. Shohei in the Dodgers 10-8 win over the Cubs, which was a come from ahead, then win again kind of game where they were up huge 7-3. The Mets tied him, and then the Dodgers ended up winning it. Shohei Ohtani, 47th homer, 48th stolen base. So 47-48 on the quest for 50-50.
I missed the stolen base. So he got that later in the game?
I don't know the sequence.
I believe it was after the home
run. Yeah. I believe so, yes. So the Dodgers end up winning. The really big...
He going to hit 50-50? He's going to hit 50-50,
there's
right?
No question he's hitting 50-50. Right. I mean, I shouldn't say that, because once you get to 49, maybe you start tightening up. I don't know.
I started thinking about that stuff last night.
But yeah. I don't know. These guys are not like you and I.
Also, like if it's final games of the season, how much are you pushing Shohei Ohtani to run on the base pass? Like, just...
Well, he'll get the stolen bases real quick, so they don't have to worry about that. The big outcome for us, at least for our Atlanta Braves, at least I have an Atlanta Braves bet to miss the playoffs. You and I have it. We had a VEASAN-wide contest. I don't know if anybody still talks about this.
Yeah, I don't know either.
But because we could win it, we're going to talk about it. The contest was every VEASAN show had to put in a baseball futures bet, and you were allowed to change it if you didn't like it. So I was on vacation. Kelly goes ahead and says Braves to win the division. He didn't consult with me. So I came back, and I'm like, we're doing the opposite. We're switching it to Braves to miss the playoffs. It's 8-1. Braves lose yesterday. Mets win. Mets have a one-game lead, 16 games left for both of these two teams. And the Mets won it in dramatic fashion. This is you got to feel bad for this guy on the Blue Jays. The pitcher on the Blue Jays, who now is, this is two starts. We're talking about Bowden Francis.
Yeah, Bowden Francis.
Bowden Francis, two starts now in his last four, where he has taken a no-hitter into the ninth inning. It was against the Angels a few starts ago. And Taylor Ward hits a leadoff solo jack against him to break up the no-hitter. three starts ago. What's that?
Great hair.
Yeah. Oh, Taylor Ward. Great hair. Oh, didn't know that. Yeah. And then last night, the Blue Jays are, that was a three to nothing game. So the Blue Jays were able to hold on there. But last night, Blue Jays up 1-0 against the Mets in the ninth. Francisco Lindor steps up, lead off Jimmy Jack to tie it up. And then the Mets just blow him out after that. So two starts in four that this guy has taken a no hitter. Bowden Francis into the ninth inning. It reminds me of when I was a kid, there was a Blue Jays pitcher by the name of Dave Steeb. Dave Steeb was one of these guys in an era when everybody, well, not everybody, but when the great pitchers did win 20 games because they went a long time. Steeb had multiple seasons where he won like 17 and 18. And he had two no hitters. The last two starts of the season in 1988, he went 8 2/3 consecutively with a no hitter. And he got broken up on the last out of both of them.
That's just awful.
He finally threw a no-hitter 2 years later, but it was this amazing moment. But this is who this kid reminds me of. Bowden Francis.
Dylan Cease, right? Didn't he go through that too? Didn't he have one broke?
Some near ones, and then he finally got one.
Yeah.
Well, Mets take a one-game lead over the Braves for our purposes for the third and final wild card.
We're coming for that prize. We don't know what it is. Where it's at.
We were not told what the. What the prize was.
But we're finding you, Dan Miller.
Moneyline Dan Miller. What are you giving us if we win? Okay, let's talk some college football and some pro football. Zach Cohen joins us now. Of course, the glue, part of the glue that holds this whole operation together. Betting on X is where you can find him on Twitter. He joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. What's happening, Zach?
Not much. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well. Let's start with Thursday night football. That seems like the appropriate place to start. You like the Dolphins. You and me, we're the only two, apparently.
Yeah, I jumped on the Dolphins -120 on the money line on Tuesday. I've been writing up the Thursday night football game every Tuesday morning, so I've been getting early lines on that. If you do want to check the website, there's going to be some stuff up there that you probably won't be able to get later in the week. One of those was Jeff Wilson anytime touchdown score +240. That's now down to about even money. You know, I had a pretty good feeling that we wouldn't see at least one of those two Dolphins backs with it being a short week. And I don't think there's going to be any, you know, harm done to the running game in Miami. I think that obviously with, you know, the 49ers offensive system now being in Miami, I think that you could trust pretty much any running back that you throw back there. Jeff Wilson's a guy that has had a good nose for the end zone, you know, his entire career. So I think that he'll be fine in this game if he ends up being, you know, the workhorse, and I do think he'll find the end zone in this one.
By the way, that was a facetious joke on my part, because obviously the line has come our way to the Dolphins, if not to three, but at least from 1 to 2.5. So Zach and I clearly aren't the only two that have the Dolphins, but in our little sphere of everybody being too close to the sun, I feel like you and I are the only people that have the Dolphins, and that the too cool for school crowd all has the Bills.
I don't feel like I've heard that much about the this week. Yeah. I think Drew, like, I don't even know if Drew's on the Bills. I know he said he was leaning that way. But yeah, I don't feel like I've heard that many people betting this that day tonight.
I do.
I do like the -2.5. I'll throw that out there. If you can't get that money line, it's not out there anymore, so I understand that. So I do like -2.5 on Miami. I know that this has been a pretty lopsided head-to-head, you know, in favor of Buffalo over the last couple of years, but I don't think that this Buffalo defense is the same as we've seen in recent years. And I don't think that the, you know, receiver group is going to be able to create consistent separation against a good group of Dolphins corners. So I think that, you know, that's going to be a struggle on both sides of the ball.
Is there anything else in week two in the NFL that you like, Zach?
I have a slight lean on the Eagles. It's a lot of points now, but I just thought that, you know, Cousins looked really bad in week one. I know that that's something that, you know, you don't want to overreact too much to one game, but it's a movement for a guy that had, you know, a torn Achilles in the offseason. So I think that they're going to have a really hard time against Philadelphia, who I really like this season. I know that they are coming off of that Brazil game, but had a few extra days to make up for it. So I think that the Eagles are going to win pretty easily.
All right. What about college football? What'd you land on here? And I know you wrote this up at VSiN.com as well.
Yep. My favorite play this week is Indiana -3 against UCLA. That's another one where, you know, UCLA comes into this game with an extra week of rest because they have not played since facing Hawaii in that first game, but they look terrible in that game. And it was really what was expected after what we had heard in the offseason. I know a lot of people at this company, myself included, very down on UCLA. I thought that the running back situation was a nightmare. You know, outside of Ethan Garbers, they rushed for under 20 yards amongst all their running backs against a really bad Hawaii defense. And I just don't think that passing game is going to be able to get anything going. Indiana, obviously not a good team in the past, but Cignetti is kind of like a poor man's Kalen DeBoer, that he has won everywhere that he has been. He brought over a ton of talented transfers to Bloomington. The early results, obviously some bad competition, but Indiana has blown out both of their previous two opponents. Last week, it was Florida International. And I just kind of think that this team is much better than UCLA and much better coached. So I know that they're going on the road, but I don't really think that the Bruins are going to have a home field advantage. I don't think the 3 points is enough here.
Okay. Big 10 game. Big 10 game.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, no problem.
Appreciate
that. Make sure you were on board.
By the way, speaking of that, we should probably mention you. I know you're joking because you're the conference.
You're right, yeah, but there's actually news. Yeah.
Mountain West announcing, or not the Mountain West announcing, but four schools announcing that they will depart the Mountain West to join the Pac-12. The Pac-12 Board of Directors unanimously approving applications from Boise State, Colorado State, San Diego State, and Fresno State as the conference realignment continues. In college football. So there you go. Pac-12 lives. It's the Pac-6 now.
Who are they turning down? I like the idea of them approving teams, right? Does that mean they're turning down some schools? Like
Tufts University.
Right? Yeah.
Turning down
Tufts.
Yeah,
not going to work.
Zach, anything else college football?
Yeah, I like a former Pac-12 team, Oregon, against new Pac-6 team, Oregon State. It's a -16.5. I know that Oregon's looked pretty bad to start this season, but I don't think they look as bad as, you know, the numbers suggest. I think that it's still a team that is, you know, moving up the field rather easily on offense. I know that I had this kind of similar handicap last week with Boise State, but Boise State is a team that a lot of people expect to make the college football playoff. They're more talented than Oregon State. So I do think that the Ducks are going to win this game pretty easily. They've been really good as road favorites under Dan Lanning. Also covered when they played against Oregon State last year. That was when Oregon State was coached by Jonathan Smith, who I think is one of the top 10 coaches in all of college football. It was also when Oregon State had a lot of, you know, Pac-12 talent that had not yet departed in the transfer portal. So I do think this is going to be a game that Oregon kind of gets back on track. I think that the offense is going to be a little bit too much for Oregon State to keep up with, especially with, you know, their lack of a passing game. And I do think that the Oregon defense is going to look a lot better this week.
All right, Zach, you jumping back into tennis next week? Is that how this works for you?
I've still been on tennis. I have not looked at anything for today, but yeah, I've been betting challengers. I've been betting, you know, these smaller tournaments in Guadalajara. I had Olivia Gadicki yesterday to cover against Collins. Okay. She won outright.
But, yeah, she won. Beat Danielle freaking Collins as a big dog. I was just mentioning earlier that we were at the ATP Challenger here in Las Vegas, and there is nothing like being on site and having books, you know, having the number, and it is really a race to get you where it is. But you can also, it's not only a race, you can also see what's happening in a way when you're watching it live. And you get, obviously, you get the head start on them, but they're pretty quick. They're pretty quick. Like, you have to be super quick.
These days,
but it was awesome. There was a Lerner Tien match out there, which was a middling fest. And then prior to that, Dennis Kudla was in action. So some players that we recognize from the main tour out here at the Challenger. Zach, thank you. Good luck with all your bets, man.
No problem. I was wondering how they're going to handle that heat, even though you and Fezzik can do it.
It was more windy than it was hot. Yeah, that was the problem, was the wind.
Smoke.
All right, Zach. Enjoy, man. Thank you. Zach Cohen, everybody. Thanks, guys. Our senior editor at VSiN, at Betting on X, again, is where you can find him, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. UFC 306 with Jordan Sherwood. Got to ask him about the Bears, too, next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
With the National Football League underway, there's never been a better time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. Make this football season your best ever. With full VSiN Pro access to our daily best bets, betting splits, betting systems, and 24/7 video access, grab our football season special and get full VSiN Pro access from now through the Super Bowl for just $175 United States dollars. Or start a monthly subscription for just $9.99 and see why VSiN Pro is your ticket to a winning season. Don't wait. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up and start betting smarter today. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. He joins us to talk UFC 306, but I got to ask him about his beloved Chicago Bears and what he thinks about them after week one. And Caleb Williams, 93 yards passing. It's Jordan Sherwood, everybody, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Jordan, of course, co-host of the Unnamed MMA podcast at ESPN Chicago, at Wood on ESPN 1000, for those checking him out on Twitter. What's happening, Jordan?
Yeah, it wasn't a good performance by Caleb Williams and the offense. And you know, I was there, Gil, and look, we were riding high as Bears fans, feeling pretty good about ourselves. And then it was the same old story, down 17-0 at the half, not feeling great. But miraculously, the defense, special teams pulled it out. Hoping for some better things. I think, again, we got to look back and say, hey, he's a rookie. He's going to make mistakes. Not going to find guys down the field, but a little bit disappointing. We thought we were going to have an offensive juggernaut on our hands with the Bears, what we saw in preseason. Maybe it'll take to week two to get them rolling.
I like how Jordan says this with his White Sox apparel on. It's like, oh, yeah, this
White
sounds
Sox
great.
Apparel, White Sox sign. Yeah.
As a, how quickly will Bears fans go to, oh, my God, he's terrible. Already next week
they've already done it. There's definitely a few fans that have already been calling in the ESPN Chicago and having those claims, because look, there's high expectations, but you got to take a step back and realize the Bears fans have never had a quarterback ever that had any, like, Caleb Williams taking the snap on Sunday, he's automatically in the top five of Bears all-time quarterbacks just by taking the one snap.
Of course.
Those are lofty expectations. Yes. Yeah. Sorry, Caleb.
All right. UFC 306, Jordan. UFC saluting Mexican fight heritage. Noche. UFC 306, to be exact. And the main event, Sugar Sean O'Malley against Merab Dvalishvili. With Sugar Sean, he is a minus 140 favorite now, as I'm looking across the board. Obviously, few cents either way. At one time considered maybe the best pound for pound. How do you view this here? Because obviously Dvalishvili is going to try to put him in a straitjacket in this one.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the first and foremost, I think it's important to look at and see what the opening lines were. Merab Dvalishvili was the favorite, heavy favorite. You know, he was probably around that $1.40 price when the fight was announced. Money poured in on Sean O'Malley. It's the Sugar Show. He's a popular fighter. I expect money to continue to trickle in on Sean O'Malley as we get closer to Saturday night. But I'll say this, it's a difficult matchup for Sean O'Malley to defend his championship. Merab Dvalishvili, he's known as a machine. And look, he sets takedown records when he's inside the octagon, just in constant pursuit and looking for the takedown. And he's going to, you know, have to step through fire. Sean O'Malley is a sniper. He is an outstanding striker. We saw that on display when he became the champion. He knocked out Merab's buddy, his training partner, Aljamain Sterling, to win the championship. And many people believe that that's going to be the same. There's also concern about Merab because he showcased a cut that he suffered a couple of weeks ago in training. But I'm not on that side. I think Sean O'Malley has struggled with grapplers, and Merab's probably the best that he's ever seen, just in constant pursuit of takedowns. And there's also concern about Sean O'Malley's cardio holding up for five rounds with the pace that Merab Dvalishvili has. So I was on Merab when he was the favorite at $1.20. I'm certainly going to be on Merab as he is now the underdog in this fight. You're just going to have to avoid that sniper O'Malley coming in. And I think Dvalishvili can get his hand raised on Saturday night.
Yeah, you are. You're going to be on him as a dog if you were on him as a slight favorite, for sure. Sugar Sean O'Malley, 18-1 lifetime, and Dvalishvili, 17-4. Jordan going with the dog there. What about the...
And no reason to rush a bet, right, Jordan, like you're talking about? I mean, this is going to be all O'Malley coming in, money coming in late, right?
Yeah, absolutely. O'Malley's going to continue to flood in, so I would actually recommend waiting on Merab until as we get closer to fight night. And look, Sean O'Malley is talented. I wouldn't be surprised if O'Malley sleeps him in the first round. That's how good Sean O'Malley is, but you have to remember, O'Malley, even though he's got that knockout power, has really not been a knockout artist. He's a guy that's going three rounds to decision, going five rounds to decision. Outside of the Aljamain Sterling knockout, he hasn't been really knocking out his opponents.
You've seen these conspiracy theories that are going around in UFC Twitter, where it's like O'Malley. So this is Noche UFC 306, right? He had a Mexican girlfriend, they cheated on or something. So everybody's like, there's no way they're going to let him win. And this, you know, it's like that kind of thing. You pay attention to any of that nonsense?
No, not at all. And I also am really steadfast on, I understand it's UFC Noche, I understand it's Mexican Independence Day, but I don't think that there's going to be that impact on the Mexican, those Latin American fighters that are competing on Saturday night, like it would be if it was in Mexico City, like it would be, or like for the Brazilian fighters when they go to Brazil.
Yeah.
I've heard about the Noche setup at the Spear. It's going to be a different atmosphere. So I'm not of the belief that fighters outside of, for pride, fighting on UFC Noche are going to be motivated by the crowd, because I think it's going to be a partisan crowd.
Okay, let's go to the co-main, women flyweight, Alexa Grasso and Valentina Shevchenko. Grasso is a you know, right around the same favorite price as O'Malley is in the main. She's right at minus 140. We're showing minus 135, but as I'm looking, right around minus 140. Shevchenko won, speaking of greatest pound for pound. I know Amanda Nunes existed, but Shevchenko was considered by some to be a great fighter and right in that class in terms of great pound for pound. She's 36 now, though. How do you see this?
Yeah, and that's a little bit of a concern, slowing down at 36 years of age, and a lot of familiarity for these two ladies. They've been in the octagon now for 9 rounds against each other. One was a draw. The other one, Valentina Shevchenko, was winning handily, makes a mistake, and Grasso takes advantage and submits her and gets the win. Look, until I see Valentina Shevchenko get dominated and lose and really fall off, I understand she was stopped in that first encounter, but was winning that fight and arguably won the second fight when they drew. So until she gets dominated and loses, I think at plus money, Valentina Shevchenko is someone you also have to take a look at. It's no discredit, Alexa Grasso. She'll be the faster fighter, probably have a little bit of advantage on the feet in that regard. But I still like Valentina Shevchenko, even at her age and rumors about her, kind of thinking about her post-fight career, being the dog. Until she loses. So I'm dogs are barking on Saturday night in my belief, remember Rob, and also with Valentina Shevchenko.
All right, well, let's go to another dog, Brian Ortega. You want to take him as well?
Yeah, I just feel like, again, you know, Brian Ortega, the only times that he has lost have been to the dominating champions that we've seen in the featherweight, the division. I think there's a little bit of a concern because these two guys were supposed to fight 6 weeks ago. Ortega couldn't make the 145-pound limit. He tried to agree to a 155-pound limit, but then was pulled from the fight. But what do we know about Diego Lopez? You know, he has dominated guys that he's supposed to dominate. He looked impressive 6 weeks ago against, taking a fight basically on 3 hours notice against Dan Ige, who was on his couch, but then chose to take the fight. But how good is Diego Lopez? I don't think we know that because he hasn't fought the upper echelon at 145. My only concern is how healthy is Brian Ortega? And he's already talked about moving up to 155. So actually, this is a fight that I'm going to recommend betting live. I think Diego Lopez could certainly go in there. He's well-rounded, talented enough to get Brian Ortega out of there. But if it goes into the second round, that becomes a little bit of a dicey situation for me. So Brian Ortega has had miraculous comebacks before. He's a great submission artist. So I almost would recommend waiting and then betting this fight live, even if Lopez is winning that first round and grabbing Ortega as a bigger dog.
Okay, I like that. So Dvalishvili as a dog, Shevchenko as a dog, Ortega's a dog, but also a live betting recommendation on Brian Ortega against Diego Lopez. You are not averse to leaning to the favorite side. We don't often go to the early prelims, but Raul Rosas Jr. is a massive, and I'm talking about a prohibitive, minus 850 favorite over Kilang Aori. You have a creative way to bet this, though.
Yeah, I mean, look, you're not going to lay $8 on this. Even throw him into a parlay, forget it. But the UFC, there's a reason why this guy's opening up the card. He's, you know, 19 years of age. He's already hinted that he wants to retire by 25. The UFC expects this guy to go out and get this fight card started off in a spectacular fashion and win this fight and win it pretty decisively and handily. So I think Raul Rosas to win inside the distance and likely submit a Kailing is the route to take. Rosas is not going to want to mess around on the feet, but he has the advantage utilizing the grappling, utilizing the takedowns and getting this fight to the ground. So you jump that price down from $8 to $1.50 for him to win by sub. I think that's where you find the value in Rosas Jr., who will be motivated fighting to open up the card at the Spear on UFC Noche.
All right, Dvalishvili, Shevchenko, Ortega, and then Rosas Jr. At minus 150 on the prop bet. All right, listen, the White Sox are 33-114. They just got to win 8 more to break the all-time futility record, and I'm sure nothing will go wrong with the Bears and Caleb Williams, Jordan. It should all be okay for you.
it's going to be celebrating for sure. I think there were less fans at the game yesterday than wins, so there were 32 fans at the game.
Oh, man.
For the White Sox.
I believe it, too. I'm sure they announced far more than that, though. Thank you, Jordan. Appreciate it.
All right, fellas. Thank you.
Jordan Sherwood, everybody. Once again, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Check out Jordan, if you would, please, on the Twitter machine, of course, at Wood on ESPN 1000. NFL power rankings on the other side.